You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, for better or worse, for good or bad, we grind out every experience presented to us and give you our honest opinion on those experiences. Today we've got a show we're going to talk about Enslaved, Odyssey to the West.
Yeah.
So we're going to throw that out there. Then we're going to tangent. And we're going to talk about post-apocalyptic stuff. Post-apocalyptic stuff. Let's get that mush mouth out the fucking way. Talking like the fucking kid from Stranger Things over here.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go with a reference to one of our guests.
Oh, no. So, because this game takes place in a post-apocalyptic world,
mm-hmm.
we're going to talk about some of our other favorite media with that sort of
mm-hmm.
setting. So,
yeah.
I'll let you go ahead and take lead on this first, Ryan.
So as we were kind of brainstorming this, I think the first and most obvious one that comes up is Mad Max.
Obviously, yeah.
And it's very stylized.
We both picked on that
yeah,
one. So.
Yeah, it's very over the top. It's very, you know, George Miller has a very specific vision for it. But that's also kind of, you know, the typical post-apocalyptic kind of vision. It's usually very gray, very deserty, like just everything's kind of in shambles and whatever. So I wanted to think of something very different. Mm-hmm. And for that, I picked Last Man on Earth, which is a TV show on Fox right now. It just finished its second season. And for what it is, it's Will Forte, who is the last man on Earth. And if you've not seen the show, it's fantastic.
It's really well done, yeah.
The first episode is maybe one of my favorite things TV shows have done in the last several years. It is literally just Will Forte by himself for 30 minutes living and being a goof. It is a comedy, and that's something you don't see with post-apocalyptic media really ever. It's always usually serious or an action-based movie, but this is a comedy, and a lot of the comedy comes from like, well, if I'm the only person left and there's no rules or whatever, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can, you know, buy up all the wigs, grab all the wigs, put them on stands, and just get a giant flamethrower and burn wigs. And like that's 3 minutes of the show is just like this silly stuff. One of my favorite gags from that opening episode is he starts with a bunch of, you know, bottles and he's rolling bowling balls into them. Then he gets like fish tanks and he lines them up and then he's throwing a bunch of bowling balls like in the back of his truck into the fish tank, like bowling with these big glass fish bowls. And then like it keeps ramping up to the point where he ties a thing of gasoline to one car and then rolls it down a hill into a bunch of other cars lined up. And there's big explosion. It's really funny. And it's just ridiculous. It's just silly. It's over the top. And then slowly you're introduced to more people and it turns into more of a cringe humor kind of show. It's like The Office. Like The Office at its most cringiest is this show because his character, Phil Miller, doesn't quite fit in with people. He's kind of socially retarded after the 2 or 3 years he's been alone, so he doesn't quite know what to do, so he sneaks around, he's manipulative, he lies, he even like shaves his beard at one point and shows up and pretends he's another person, which nobody buys for a second.
Yeah,
but it's really funny, and it takes what is so serious and dark usually like in such a light way that I can't help but recommend it. Like it's so fun.
Plus, it's Will Forte, and that dude is fucking great.
He's not been bad in anything he's done.
No.
He sometimes in bad movies or something, but he's always like bringing his A game.
I love him in fucking 30 Rock when him and Jenna have the weirdest relationship ever seen, ever. And it still works so well. And I don't know many people who could pull that off the way that Will Forte does. But like, you're never bothered by it almost. It's just,
it's not offensive, and it's not like a one-note character either. Like, it's surprisingly touching where in another show, like, it wouldn't be, or with another actor, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, so I recommend it just for that. Will Forte is fucking great.
Absolutely.
And, he'll start you off great, and then the show does. It's got some legs, so. Mm-hmm. I've kind of got two. One I won't focus on as much because, it, I mean, it is kind of related. And if Laura ever listens to this or our good friend Brooks, but easily, hands down, my favorite post-apocalyptic setting is from The Dark Tower.
Oh, okay.
Which is my favorite book series of all time. I was never the Tolkien kid. I was always the Stephen King kid. And once I stumbled upon this series of books, it's just, it's completely mind warping when it starts to get into all the things going on in there. I mean, for it generally follows a lot of the same tropes, but the fact that there's like dimensional travel and there's alternate versions of the same world. And I always like the way that Roland, who is the gunslinger, it's instead of saying it's post-apocalyptic, they just always refer to it in his realm that the world has moved on. It's kind of left everybody else behind. It's there's nothing really. It's people trying to survive now in the world that has moved on. I always thought that was a very poetic kind of way to say things like that. And the other one that I also really enjoy it's another book one, but the movie was great too. But that's The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
That's fucking depressing. Heavy. Yeah, that's the complete opposite of Last Man on Earth.
Absolutely.
So bleak.
But that one is very good, and it's.
Are you specifically the book or the movie? Do you have one that you prefer?
I do prefer the book.
Okay.
But the movie is also it holds up really well. Mm-hmm. It's got Viggo Mortensen. Mm-hmm. As the man.
Charlize Theron's in it too.
But very, I mean, she's the briefly. Mom, but mm-hmm. It's very minute. It's mostly him. I mean, and him
is
and
it
the boy.
Asa Butterfield, I think, is the little boy.
I can't remember.
I think he was in Ender's Game, if that sounds right.
But he's it is very dark, very bleak. Mm-hmm. There's like no hope. But that's what I imagine a real post-apocalyptic setting would be like, where ain't nothing on your side, there's no forgiveness. I don't know, there's a lot of parts with cannibalism that are fucked up. Cannibalism seems to take a big part in post-apocalyptic worlds, so
I just came to mind, like Fallout, like cannibalism, course, and yeah, all that Fallout. And it's just in every one you see cannibalism.
Would you count the Escape series as post-apocalyptic? Escape from New York and LA.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they happen
They're kind of only in that region, though, right?
You would say post-apocalyptic is like the whole globe is affected by something. But, I mean, those movies are like, it's New York has been affected, and now it's people in the wake of a big aftermath, like trying to restart a civilization. So I think they fit. I think you can make an argument for those.
I like those movies a lot too. New York much better than LA.
Yeah, I don't remember LA much at all, but New York's fantastic.
I just remember LA, he gets out of a bind by winning a basketball game, and it's really dumb.
Yeah, I think he has to save the president's daughter or something.
It's like,
and he rides a wave just like James Bond in Die Another Day, mm-hmm. also, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the best. New York is a lot better.
Yeah.
But it is Kurt Russell as Snake Plissken, and you can't go wrong there. Even in L.A., like, it's cool to see him fuck shit up, so.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, let's get in and talk about this game, man. Enslaved Odyssey to the West, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll have a bumper right here.
All right, here we go. Bumper. So it's a track from Enslaved. Man, it throws me off. I want to say Enslaved Journey to the West, but they, I never remember it as Odyssey to the West.
Well, they switched it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I want to, because it is based off the novel, Journey to the West. It's a famous Chinese novel. It's like a parable almost.
Yeah, with the Monkey King, if I remember correctly. And that's why the main character in the game is Monkey, played by Andy Serkis.
Yes, who has a gigantic involvement in this game.
Mm-hmm.
He had a big part of this game, and it's weird that this came out like at the hype of all of his Lord of the Rings stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this game was never really that massive of a hit.
No. Well, he was with Ninja Theory kind of from the get-go because their first game wasn't Heavenly Sword on the PS3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, he was the big bad guy.
Was he? I can't remember that.
Like, he was the emperor who had, like, a cross eye or something. And it was very Andy Serkis's performance and probably one of the best things about that game.
Yeah.
It was a little forgettable and kind of bland. But he stuck around and actually had a big part of this one. He helped co-write the script with Alex Garland, who you'll know from Ex Machina, which was one of my favorite movies from last year.
I really enjoyed that movie too, yeah.
Yeah, and so I just actually found this out long after the fact. I found this out right before this podcast, and that's shocking to me. And it you can kind of see it in here because there's a lot of technology stuff dealt with and kind of a parable at the end that's kind of left up kind of vague for the audience to decide, much like Ex Machina or like a Twilight Zone episode. But Andy Serkis is the main character in this game, and he also has a role later, which I don't know how much we'll get into spoilers right away. But yeah, he has a really big part in this game, and it's I completely bought him in it. I loved his character. What do you think about him and his performance here?
I mean, obviously, it's fucking great. I think Andy Serkis's involvement makes every part of this that he is involved in amazing. Mm-hmm. I do, however, have some issues with this game.
Oh, go for it.
One of my biggest, man, I found this game very hard to get into. It had a lot of, like, I had a real hard time, like, just it didn't ever really hook me or grab me. And I think, you know, I think you will disagree with my point here, but overall, I find the game world really bland.
Ooh, yeah. I will disagree.
Yeah, and I think I was reading some critic things about the game, too, mm-hmm. and I think I'm one of the very few that actually holds this opinion, but it is a bright world, which is not what you usually get with an apocalyptic world, but I find that it, like, nothing really stood out. Like, I don't know, it was just, everything was so green in the first city, and then it's like it's nothing really stylized outside of Monkey himself. So it all seems so bland and almost boring looking to me. But Andy Serkis's performance, I mean, that was one of the big driving factors. I wanted to see more of that, and I started to get hooked more. I think it was like maybe 2 hours in the game for me when you find the first of those white spinning masks and you walk through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you find out later that that's actually the headband that he has been forced to wear by Trip, the female character. She takes a slave's headband off of one of the dead slaves from the prison ship that they were both escaping from. And attaches it to Monkey while he's passed out from this crash so that he will be forced to help her. And that's where the enslaved name from the game comes from.
Well, and we find out that this slavery thing, like, it's pretty wide scale. Like, everybody is kind of been taken up and enslaved with these headbands. And that comes into play later. But
what it does, like, what I liked about it was that it does start to give you more story as you find more of those white things. And what it is that's, so all the, it's hard, it's so weird to try to explain, but, like, so basically, then we'll just jump into.
All right, so this is the end.
Yeah.
So if you've not played Enslaved, I say play it and then come back and listen.
Yeah.
Because I do think the ending is something cool, but
the ending is the absolute best part.
We are going to spoil it right now.
I wished I would have just, I don't know. Yeah, I think you should play the game, but I also kind of wished I would have just seen the ending. And no, but it's hard to just jump to that without
going. You have to have the whole journey and get the character interactions. And
but so basically, so the main bad guy is named Pyramid, and he also lives in a giant gold pyramid. Mm-hmm. And it's Andy Serkis live action, as you have noted here. But it is, as you walk in, you don't even control it at this point. Once the sequence starts, you have no control. It's the epilogue. It is the final thing. But Andy Serkis has been taking people up and enslaving them with these headbands. And through his memories of what the world was like before the apocalypse, has shared his memories with these people of that world. And mm-hmm. but it's also sort of he's forcing them to do it, to relive all of these memories and moments in time.
Mm-hmm.
So they are enslaved in that regard. And they're all wearing the headband that Monkey has been forced to wear. And that's why, as you go through the game, you get little snippets of what's happening, and it's very confusing at first.
Yeah, you see like the world as we know it. And yeah, you see like little glimpses of that. So cars you don't really and know until
all that stuff.
The final cutscene mm-hmm. that it's Pyramid forcing everybody, and he says forcing, but he's a bad guy in the sense of like Magneto is a bad guy. Like you kind of understand why he's doing it.
Yeah,
like it makes sense. He's trying to give them a better world. Like they're allowed to live in this matrix of sorts of his memories, have lives, raise children, whereas like everybody on the outside like just kind of has to survive for life because the machines and mechs that they use in this war that ended everything are out there just still hunting out there, yeah, and killing people. So it ends with Trip kind of pulling the plug on Pyramid as Monkey's kind of seeing it for himself, and he says like it's beautiful, and
he does like it, yeah.
Yeah, and then it just cuts to black, it stops, everybody starts to wake up, all the headbands turn off, Pyramid dies, and like the final line of the game is Trip just like, did I do the right thing? I did the right thing, right? And then it just cuts.
Yeah.
And it's just this kind of, it's a good parable. It ends on like such a ambiguous ending that I think is a fun ambiguous ending. It's not frustrating like some ambiguous endings are.
Getting to the, like I said, the ending made my struggle, and I guess I mm-hmm. should say my grind with this game, worth it. I was like, all right, that was actually really fucking mm-hmm. cool ending. I like that when he takes the mask off of Pyramid, it's fucking Andy Serkis after like 150 years. Cause yeah, that's this game I takes like place that. 100. Yeah. I mean, it is a fucking old, decrepit ass man that should not be alive. Yeah. I like that like one of his eyes isn't even working. He's just so old and broken down. And I like that he's really old, but he has like those mechanical things on his fingers to help him still
so
type
he's
really
fast.
Really
quick and twitchy, yeah, almost like a nurse from Silent Hill. Yeah, it's very creepy.
It's really weird, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's has to wear these mechanical gloves to make him and help him do that, I thought that was a really cool, creepy touch. Because there's no way somebody of that age could do it. And at this point in his life, he is also a slave to that whole mm-hmm. thing. It's a nice presented story in effect. I mean, there's a lot of different takes on the enslavement of these people. Like, mm-hmm. They are having this other life, but it's very heavily implied that most of them don't have a choice in selecting that. Mm-hmm. Much like in the Matrix, like you don't have the choice. You just are there from the beginning. He literally kidnaps people and forces them to go through this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I mean, you could argue that they don't have a life, really. Again, because it's
the freedom of choice, yeah, and choice versus fate, and like what does it mean to be human? Like, yeah, they're having a great life, but it's not their own. Like they didn't make that choice, and like that's the dilemma. And I think that's a very interesting dilemma that the game ultimately doesn't come down as, you know, that's right or that's wrong. It's just, it's a dilemma. You decide, audience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of sad to hear that you had to grind to get that point and that was your favorite part of the game. Because I can admit, like, there are some issues with the game. Its combat is probably, biggest mm-hmm. point of... It's too easy, it's too simplistic, and it's just a little generic. Mm-hmm. There are some really cool things to do with the camera, like finishers where Monkey will, like, hit a robot with his staff and it'll, like, rip into two, and close-ups, like,
yeah,
him pushing the pole through somebody, and it's, like, really neat. But then you see that 20 times in the next 2 hours, and...
I really liked a lot of the platforming, and they really emphasize that Monkey acts like a monkey. I mean, he is a human.
He's been a survivor on the outside for a long time, so he's had to, you know, essentially...
He's like a scavenger.
Yeah. Like, what's the fucking walking thing?
He's very similar to Rey in
like the District
Star
B-13
Wars.
Kind of... Strider? Parkour.
Yeah.
He's so he's had to parkour essentially to get around. So he can move around very agilely, and he's very quick. And that stuff works really well for me. It's almost like Prince of Persia.
Yes, very much so. I would absolutely agree with that. And Prince of Persia or even Eco-esque.
Well, that's what I have. Yeah. I don't know if you saw it. It might be down, I but I was like, this game is a blend of Prince of Persia, Eco, and Heavenly Sword. Yeah. And that Heavenly Sword is the combat stuff that doesn't quite work.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they almost kind of just took from Heavenly Sword and copy-pasted.
They did.
Because that was the blend, like that... Heavenly Sword was great because it was a launch title, and then it becomes incredibly forgettable. So yeah,
I agree. Well, unlike Heavenly Sword, I think this game is paced very well. I didn't have the trouble getting into it because it kind of starts off with like a big bang. Like you get this really cool set piece where you're on the slaver ship that's going down and crashes, and you're kind of maneuvering around as it's going down on the outside. You're fighting people and jumping from fin to fin on this plane. It's like really cool, grabs you, and then like you get combat section, then you'll go to a boss, then there's like a big chase thing like out of Crash Bandicoot where something big's chasing you and you're running at the camera.
Yep.
Then you get like a motorcycle thing, and then you get a cloud, so you're riding around, and it just seemed like the game constantly was varying itself off,
trying to mix it up. And I do give it that. Again, I think it was just the visuals just looked not great to me, and I don't usually care about visuals in games. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I replay a lot of PS1 games, and it's just something more like everything is almost muddy, and nothing really stands out. Even Monkey, who's supposed to me.
Hmm.
So that's just again, it's not every game is perfect. Not everybody likes them for the same reasons. That was one of my hard things I had to get over. But but I did, and I think it was worth it in the end. That ending is.
Yeah.
It is one of the better video game endings I've seen in a long time. I will say that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a pretty solid story from start to finish. And
Andy Serkis as Pyramid, when you see, like, because it's a cutscene of him, too, as, like, real-life Andy Serkis.
It's literally just him in, like, a black turtleneck in front of, like, a bridge background in Photoshop.
But it works really cheap, well.
But it makes sense for the game, and it didn't feel out of place.
His performance in that was really fucking good.
He's almost like robotic. Like he doesn't show a lot of emotions. He's like, very restrained.
Don't do that.
Which I think is really cool because like the one live action thing you see in the game is like that very restrained. You don't see a lot of emotion, but like the characters in the game are like very emotive because they did the Weta like motion capture stuff like that he's done for Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movies, and he did for Gollum. Like they capture his face and put on these characters, so they have like the subtle emotions and like their eyes are very expressive, and you can kind of see like they start off him and Trip, and I think Trip's actress does a great job too, but they start off kind of contentious, like they aren't
she has basically enslaved him and made him do things,
which makes sense because survival, like that's what she had to do, but like slowly they start to bond, and it's because of the subtle emotions and like the cutscenes with like the in-game graphics, like being able to actually render nice emotion, like you buy it, you buy like their friendship when it gets to that point, like at the end.
And Trip, she comes from one of the last bastions of humanity, like a village full of other people, whereas Monkey has been a loner his whole life and survived by himself. But Trip just wants to get back to her town and see her father. And then we find out that that town has been decimated by the mechs and by Pyramid. Mm-hmm. And the only person left there is Pigsy, who's the only other character in the game.
And he is my... He is up there with the combat for me. He kind of ruins the game for me.
Visually, he looks really cool. He looks very much out of Mad Max to me.
A little bit, yeah. Except I don't know why the fat guy would gnomer himself up as Pigsy and wear like half a pig ear, like a mechanic pig ear. It just, it's kind of silly in a game that's really not been very silly.
Well, and I think, again, it's because it's based on Journey to the West, which has a lot of animal parables. They do have the pig character in that story, and I get what they're doing. But yeah, I totally feel you that it feels a little silly.
It does.
It would have worked better almost if his name was maybe another language for pig, like the Spanish version of pig or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be
real good.
But just
calling him Pigsy, and he is the big fat guy and things like that. But again, visually, he does look cool. I like that weird eyepiece thing that he's got, and his nose is like a mechanical nose almost.
Yeah.
Looks very Mad Max and fucked up. He's definitely one of the weirdest parts of this game. So.
Oh, agreed. his sacrifice at the end. Were you moved by that?
It was pretty cool.
I was too, and yeah. I did not like this character, but like that's what I'm talking about with the emotions, that when the scene happens where Pigsy kind of sacrifices himself to let Monkey and Trip get into the pyramid, like it's pretty moving. It's not like, you know, Sephiroth killing Aerith moving, but it's pretty effective, which is surprising for a character that I hated.
Yeah. Yeah, it works really well, and I enjoyed the Pigsy character to a degree. He does turn a corner at that point, and you're like, okay, that works really well. So,
I'm gonna go ahead and just make a statement real quick.
Go ahead, yeah.
So Half-Life 2 is always brought up for its strong representation of girl characters. Like Alex Vance is like up there with Jade from Beyond Good and Evil, and there's like several things. Several lists of people that are really strong female characters in video games. And I think Trip absolutely belongs on that list.
Yeah. I think her problem is that she's in this very forgettable game.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a forgettable game. No, I would say it's just not well known. It wasn't publicized or it didn't get publicity or whatever. Like, it just didn't click with the mainstream audience for some reason. But I dare you to forget, like, this game. Like, as much as you're not like crazy about the environments or whatever, like I can see that. I don't necessarily agree, but like the characters and the story, and like it's a game that's left an impression for me. So I wouldn't say it's forgettable, but I think her character is fantastic, and same with Monkey. I think they're both fantastic. But
what I like about Monkey is that even still, like knowing it going in, it doesn't sound like Andy Serkis. Like, he's changing his voice so much that, like, it's so hard to believe that that's him. It's just weird because you know what he sounds like and you know what you're expecting. Mm-hmm. And I had the same issue, and I'm not saying that it's an issue, but in episode 7, as when he's Snoke, it doesn't sound like Serkis at all.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's fantastic. He's a great voice actor, mm-hmm. and I'm surprised more people don't utilize him. Like, I think he'd be perfect for games.
I wonder if with all of his involvement, I imagine he's got to come with a high price tag, which might be a big part of it.
That could be it. Yeah, that really could be it.
I wonder, you know, how much do you think Kiefer Sutherland got paid to be fucking Snake?
Oh my god, too much, because apparently, I've not played Metal Gear Solid 5. I don't really care. There's a definitive edition coming out this year. I might finally play it after that, but like,
I think you'll play it, because I feel like we're going to be just working through all
the Metal
Gears. We'll
probably talk about it at some point.
At some point.
But so. I hear he's not even like, he doesn't really talk much either. Like, no. He says a few lines, but like, there's not that idle chit-chat like that David Hayter would be doing.
And it is explained in story, and I don't want to spoil it for you.
Why he talks like Kiefer Sutherland now?
Yeah, why he does talk like Kiefer Sutherland and why he doesn't talk very much.
Okay.
So
is Metal Gear Solid 5 Big Boss or is it Snake?
That's the thing.
Is that the spoiler?
It's neither.
Fuck. Okay.
So what it is
Jesus Christ.
The Big Boss that you play in Metal Gear 5 is a field medic that got blown up with Snake in the helicopter at the end of
Ground Zeroes.
And so they give him plastic surgery to look like Big Boss so that people try to assassinate him. But they also like implement all of Big Boss's memories into him through hypnosis. Very similar to like Liquid taking over Ocelot's arm. That was a huge spoiler for Metal Gear Solid 5, by the way, and I'm really sorry to anybody that just got into that. Because that game's pretty fucking new.
We'll have to put a tag out.
I don't know. It seems really weird and not great. So
we'll have to talk about that, because it does. Like, I think Kojima after 2 like starts to get fucking out there and convoluted.
Well,
and,
even
who is who and Big Boss and
after
all
2
that.
Even he said he didn't want to do Metal Gear anymore, and they kept making him do it. Like it
he
wasn't. It was Konami, and I mean it was a massive moneymaker for them, and so they pretty much forced him to do it where he was done, and he had to keep coming back and keep coming back. So
well, now he got to make his dream game, which is Norman Reedus naked with starfish attached to him.
I think
which is, you know.
I mean, it was just a
trailer.
He's
an artist. Kojima's an artist.
I think he is. That dude does things that most people don't get to.
I agree. I think he's pretty much let off the leash, but I think when he's let off the leash is usually when his games end up not being so great narratively. I think Metal Gear Solid 1 had the perfect balance of Konami's control and then Kojima's artistry. And then since then, it's been like an imbalance each game. You could say to like varying degrees, like I think Metal Gear Solid 2 is probably one of the more successful of those.
And I was just thinking, maybe we should just put a kibosh on this because we do have that Metal Gear Solid 2 episode coming up. So we do have that coming up in the very near future. So we'll just wait and we'll dive into this really hardcore.
Yes. Oh, we'll talk more about Kojima.
So this game has really pushed me. It wasn't on our super secret list that we're working through now. But I do want to push to you, and I would like to talk about it based on this game.
Sure.
Is Majin and the Forsaken Kingdom, which I briefly talked to you about. I think that game suffered a lot of the same things that this one did, where it was like just not very well known. A lot of people didn't know that game even came out. But I enjoyed that game a whole lot, and I played a lot of it. But I almost wonder if it, when you play it, if you'll suffer from the same things that I did here, where it's almost really kind of bland, or if not, and I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. So
yeah, it might. I think time definitely had a place with this game. Like I played it really close to its release, and I do think it's enslaved. Talking about right now, I think going to it now is going to be a little bit harder to get into because really it was like those breathtaking graphics and that new world. And I think since it's come out in what 2009, 2010. We've seen that. We've moved so far along in graphics and emotions and all this stuff that it's kind of, you know, its big trick has been done better at this point.
Yeah, it's exactly like Lethal Weapon when we talked about that.
Yeah, where exactly.
Like, by the time I played this, I'd played all the other games after it that do what it does better.
And I think so, Majin in the Forsaken Kingdom, which is what a fucking mouthful that game is. I think it might be the same, but I am interested because if it managed to capture even some of the spark that Enslaved held for me, like I'll be very happy with that.
Yeah, I would. I think you'll dig it. It does it differently. It takes the what is it? The escort thing, and kind of turns it on its head.
Okay.
Because you have this big ogre almost thing that comes with you, and he does all the dirty work while you're just a weak dude.
Do you have to like order it what to do?
Yeah, or give you it commands? You can kind of influence it, and you can. I think if I remember correctly, you can change its elemental basis to fight different things.
Okay, so that's where like kind of the puzzle combat stuff comes into play.
And it's cool like that, and also because he doesn't talk, it's almost more like a pet mechanic.
Okay,
so like, I mean he emotes, and you feel for him. It again. I'll be curious to see how you go through it, and I'll probably replay it again, too, because I haven't played it since it came out, and I played it at launch, so.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I think that's one we should do, too, so.
There you go. Now you guys know one of our secret games that's coming up.
What would I know?
None of you have played it yet, but we will talk about that game.
Yeah, so. I don't know. Do you have any other notes here?
I think we covered everything. It's like I said, I think it does something clever with like the Chinese parable. I think the story is good, and I think the characters are fantastic. And in all honesty, some of the best from that generation. I just wish the gameplay was quite up to snuff when it comes to the combat. But I do think it's fun. I think you'll have fun with the platforming and some of the puzzle stuff.
I do like some of the bosses, too.
Yeah.
I think they're the highlight of the combat in the game because they do things differently than the boring ass mechs.
Agreed.
So,
agreed completely. I think if you played this game when I played it, we'd probably be on the same page. Where
maybe,
I don't think this game is perfect. But I do think it's kind of a gem that not a lot of people played. It is kind of like Nier, where it's the budget I think was kind of rushed in order to get it out on time and in the market and ready to go. And I think some corners were cut and just like a little bit more polish and playtesting. And I think this game could have been fantastic.
Yeah.
But what's there is still really engaging, just like Nier. Nier is not a perfect game at all. And you can check out our episode on that because it's I think in a similar vein with like the scope and like really like their aim for what the game was going to be was just magnificent, and they just kind of didn't have enough resources to get it to that point, but it's still fantastic.
I'm still really pumped for that sequel too.
Oh my God, I hope Platinum Games jumping in, I think, is going to do a lot of good for it.
Because that was the biggest problem with the first one. So
was,
as long
yeah.
as, and I think they have a lot of the same team.
Yeah, working. You keep it as weird and as interesting with the story and the art direction.
And that music. But I know that I know they have the
combat?
Same composer too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's going to be pretty fucking on point.
Mm-hmm. So. That is something I am more excited than I've ever been for Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah. I mean everybody knows that I'm a giant Final Fantasy fanboy.
I throw it out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I will always be hyped for that. This is actually the second game I want to say that's based on this parable that I've played.
What's the first one?
The first one is it's a very very obscure PS1 tactical RPG. I can't remember that. I think it's just Journey to the West.
Oh, no kidding.
But you play as the Monkey King. I got into it because of I had played Final Fantasy Tactics, and I, of course, love that, and I wanted more tactics games. And this one I saw at the rental store, and they were actually selling it because it didn't get rented much. So I just straight up bought it from them and played that, and that was cool too. But it's much more like exactly like the book. It takes place in like 12th century China and all that shit, so... But this is a pretty. This book is pretty widely referenced in a lot of media currently. It's a pretty.
There's like three Stephen Chow movies based on it alone. The guy who did Kung Fu Hustle. It's well known. I think Enslaved does something a little different with it, which is nice. But what are your final thoughts on Enslaved?
Again, I did for the most part find it a grind to get to. But it does, once, I guess I found it more of a grind to start up because it was hard to get going. But once I started finding those, that first white mask and I was getting, that piqued my interest. I was like, all right, I like this. And then as you go and you find more of those, it does start to hook you more. But again, the combat I feel is always fighting you almost like,
The combat is forgettable and it's bland and it's nothing interesting, and like you said, unless you're doing the bosses, is literally you could just button mash and get through it. It's not hard.
One of the other thing I just remember this was a complaint that I had. Like, all right, so, and you mentioned Prince of Persia. So Prince of Persia, I mean, you fall down, you're fucking dead. It's you're gonna like restart or you're gonna rewind time.
Yeah.
Something, but like in this, there's sections where like you have those turret guns where like if you do a jump wrong, you're going to fall down, and it's going to pink away at your health before you can really get to, like, a cover or something if you make, like, a wrong jump.
Okay.
And it's that was just something that I encountered quite frequently on the as I kept going through, was that, like, you'd fuck up, and it would still kill you, but it wasn't, like, an instant thing where you can just easily restart. It just gets grating where you're,
it's
like...
It's a tedious, slow death.
It's just fucking just kill me and get it over. Like
yeah,
just
like a restart button would have been helpful.
Exactly. Something like that. So that was another thing, just a little bit of bad design or maybe bad implementation. And that's probably, again, like you said, you feel it's just a little rushed.
Yeah.
A little pushed out the door, a little more playtesting. Maybe they could have been like, hey, this kind of sucks if this happens here. So let's fix that. But yeah, again, overall, I think that ending is totally worth it that we spoiled at this point. So I did watch it. I wanted to see it again after I beat it. The whole ending section is up on YouTube.
That's why I did this afternoon. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it really does hold up. If you want to check that part out, I can totally recommend that. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing. It does have a Silent Hill-esque vibe, too. So
it does a pyramid. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, pyramid and like the weird fast things and the giant machine in the back and all that. So, but yeah, I guess for the most part, I would recommend this. Yeah. It's a good platformer with some not great combat. That's
agreed.
It's pretty common nowadays anyway.
Agreed.
So.
Yeah. It's, I mean, at the very least, it's better than that Prince of Persia reboot where there was literally no
Sands
combat.
Of Time was good. All the other ones are garbage.
I think the first three in that trilogy are good. I think Sands of Time is amazing and like top tier.
Oh, you're talking about the reboot of the reboot.
It's just it's called Prince of Persia.
Yes. That game is not good.
Elise, who like is your partner that literally will not let you die.
Yeah.
Which I finally played through 2 or 3 years ago after skipping it because I've heard nothing but good things. I was like, Yeah, this game is like the for same babies. Thing.
Yeah,
like,
this game is terrible. The original Sands of Time, though, is such a good fucking game. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I like when you would start to go into the other world, like the watery oasis places. That was always really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways.
We might have to do one of those.
I would totally do it. I would actually like to do one of the others because I never played them. You said the first three. It's Prince of
for
Persia,
that generation.
Sands of Time.
Then there's The Warrior Within.
And then
Two Thrones.
Two Thrones.
And
okay.
Warrior Within's...
Is that the one with the monster that chases you?
Yes. Okay. It's essentially Nemesis from Resident Evil 3. And it's fine. It's a little pressury, time-sensitive stuff. Like, you have to get this place real quick, and you can't mess up. So it's a little stressful.
Okay.
Almost like a Resident Evil game, where you have to use your resources just right in each section. But Two Thrones are... It's either Two Thrones or Two Princes.
I think it's Two Princes.
If it's Two Princes, that's that song, like, if you want to call me baby. The Spin Doctors. So no, they wouldn't have called it Two Princes. It has to be the Two Thrones.
Maybe it is.
I mean, everybody loves that song by the Spin Doctors.
I don't know anybody who even likes Spin Doctors. You
do? Spin Doctors.
Oh, man.
What?
Spin Doctors are awful.
All right, so Sound Engineer Andy is apparently a Spin Doctors fan.
Oh.
Like Little Miss Can't Be Wrong, too.
God, that song is the worst song
ever. Oh, no. Little Miss can't be wrong. Oh no. So Two Thrones is actually like really solid, and you get like a Dark Prince mechanic that gives them like
whips
and chains.
Okay, that's the emo prince.
The emo one is the second one.
Okay.
Where it's like, it looks like a Linkin Park cover. He's got his hair cut, and it's not the best. It's good.
Okay.
But Two Thrones is really, really solid. And
when was the last time you played Sands of Time?
Probably right about when it came out. Because I played through those three as they came out, and then I not touched them again.
Maybe we should just do Sands of Time and see if it holds up. I'd be into that. Because you've just said it. It's the best one easily. So.
Oh, for sure.
So,
yeah.
And I remember loving it. So, yeah. Okay. We'll get into that, too. I'm totally down with that. I still own my original copy. So.
And me, too.
Yeah, on PS2.
I can hold everything, but yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, anything else? We're gonna wrap this one up.
I think we talked it to death. I would just say I highly recommend it.
Okay.
That's it.
I don't highly recommend it, but it's playable. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for something in this...
It's not bad. It's far from a bad game.
In this abundantly overpopulated gaming market we live in nowadays.
To say that probably contributed. Was you're playing Doom and like all these things that you're super into, and you had to play this game, and
I finished this quite a while ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You got it done pretty quick.
Yeah. Like I said, once I got started to get better, I was like, well, I'll just knock this thing out and just got it done. So, but yeah, again, I'm just saying currently in this still oversaturated game market, if you cannot find anything else to play, play this.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know how many people go back to these old generations of games. Yeah. I do all the time, but
I know some people do. So I would imagine if they are those people, they've already played this. But yeah.
That's true.
I wouldn't give it a full endorsement.
That's true.
Recommendation,
the people who will love this game have probably already played it. And everybody else will think it's okay.
Yep. That's pretty much my opinion of it. So there we go. It's a lukewarm game. Let's say that.
That I love.
Yeah, you love, and I'm indifferent to. Not the worst. So there we go. That's all we got to say. As always, you know, thank you guys for listening.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very respectable, refined episode. We just had a good discussion. I mean, nothing really got out of hand.
Yeah.
I didn't have to take a pee break because I'm not drinking today.
That's
because I got really fucking drunk last night at that party, and I'm still kind of feeling it now, so... That was good too, man.
Yeah, I think everybody got really drunk. We're just, you know, babies about it.
I don't know, man.
You were
hammered. I was 0.14 according to Michelle's breathalyzer.
In the last hour, you were just like, I'm so drunk. Oh, I'm so drunk.
I don't even remember.
I'm so drunk.
I feel bad. I hate when I'm that way. It's terrible. I'm going to quit drinking again for like the next 2 months. I'm done.
Well, I'm drinking right now. So I know. It obviously did not affect you.
Enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. I'm done. Anyways, and I'm done with this episode. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. Grind out.
Hi, this is Ryan. And if you liked what you just saw or listened to, please check us out at experiencegrind.com. Find us on facebook.com/experiencegrind, at Twitter, over at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast, where Kyle's tweeting out a lot of stuff all the time. And then you can always find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Twitch, or even on YouTube. Find us, just search Experience Grind Podcast. We don't have a channel yet. Stuff's super easy to find. But please subscribe. We'll get there to you, make it even easier. And as always, if you like what you saw, we cover mini games and episodes every week. There's sure to be something you love. And as always, grind out.